That was faster than I thought. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the BAMF podcast. I am your host, Mike Lafferty, wearing what have been described as serial killer glasses, and I apologize for that. But it's late and dark here in the Rocky Mountain Empire. I had to switch them out. So, and today I have got a all-star cast of Cynthia Celeste Miller from Spectrum Games. How are you doing still, Cynthia?
Pretty good.
Christopher McLaughlin from Ghost Show Press. How you doing, Chris?
I just got two snow days. I'm a little punchy, but I'm happy.
I will take punchy and happy. And directly next to me in the Brady Bunch grid is Mr. Tom Filsinger of the well-known games Champions of the Galaxy and Legends of Wrestling. Thanks again for gracing our little dog and pony here show here, Tom. Appreciate your company. You're giving us that patina of respectability, and I am here for that. And you are also on mute. So you might want to, yeah, there you go. Got it.
All right. Oh, cool. Okay.
We have.
I thought that might make the show better.
You know, I haven't thought about that. We could have one guy just muted all show and everyone else can like MST3000, whatever they're supposed to be saying.
Yeah. The people have to read their lips.
Yeah. I might try that sometimes. All right. So introductions out of the way. Today we are talking about best, worst, weirdest of the Silver Age. What is the Silver Age, you might be saying to yourself? Well, you probably shouldn't be watching this podcast if you're asking questions of that nature. But the Golden Age is considered to be during World War II era. And then there was a period
and
of...
Slightly before.
And then there was a period where interest in superheroes, especially in comics in general, kind of lay fallow. And then in the 50s to the 70s, there was a resurgence in interest in the art form. Generally... there's a lot of debate, but scholars will tell you it started with DC publishing more superhero titles, and then Marvel followed suit with Fantastic Four number one, and then Stan Lee, Gardner Fox, Jack Kirby, Gil Kane, Steve Ditko. How do you say Carmine's last name there, Chris?
Infantino?
Thank you. That was my guess, right. But I was sure I was going to be wrong.
I always thought it was, too.
Yeah, John Romita Sr., and then the second wave of talent in the Silver Age, Denny O'Neill, who I talked to in person. R.I.P. Denny, Roy Thomas, Archie Goodwin, and actually a friend of the podcast, Chuck Rice. Chuck, I hope you're feeling better. Interviewed Roy Thomas a few years ago. Neil Adams, Jim Steranko. This is the period we're talking about. Some of the characters.
Thank you. Yeah. Cynthia mentioned another name, one of my favorites from that era.
Yeah.
What's that?
Gene Colan or Colan.
Oh, yes.
I always said Colin, but I don't know.
I have no idea.
But I loved his style too, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay. So I could keep talking, but that would be boring. And it's a roundtable discussion. So you talented and articulate people are here to talk about your favorites, your least favorites, or just the weirdest thing that came out of the Silver Age. And I can see Chris almost bursting at the seams wanting to weigh in on this. So I will... hand the mic off to him to get the conversation started.
No. If I'm bursting at the seams because it's my quarantine bod. You wanted to talk about weird stuff.
We're starting with weird. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Good and bad is relative. I know at least half this panel is huge Manos, the Hands of Fate fans. So good and bad relative terms here, but just as flat out strange. Please don't take anything I say as being anything less than me being in awe of Stan Lee's talents or just his ability to crank out that many books every single freaking month for so many years. I also don't want to get into the debate of who wrote what. Because we could be here for a year and still not settle it because the only guys that know for sure are the guys that are in there. Okay. I know we'll get mail. Believe me,
we don't get that much mail.
Feedback I've gotten is some of the comics histories books I've written. Yeah, you know, I had one of the playtesters on Golden Age going after me because of something I wrote. He even broke an NDA to trash me publicly. If you're a comics history purist, chill. All right. But anyway, But of all the things that Stan Lee was credited for writing, that to me just makes me go more than anything else. And again, I'm a huge Silver Age fan. I understand the price of the admission is that things are going to be wild and crazy and unpredictable. But that's why you freaking read Silver Age comics.
Yeah.
But the one moment where I think Stan lost me a little bit was one thing that I love ironically is when Stan will try to drop in a pop culture reference about something he clearly doesn't quite get. You know, like when, you know, the Thing will show up wearing a Beetle wig.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's awesome. It's why you love Silver Age comics, even though the back of your head, it's like you would go, Stan, I'll give you $100 for every Beatles song you can name. And that's okay. Stan is awesome. It's just clearly it was middle-aged guy throwing one to the kids and almost landing it. Okay. Yeah. So, all right. So when he was writing Daredevil, the original Daredevil,
uh-huh.
He does the plot that you're kind of required to write, where all the clueless people surrounding the central character kind of figure out who he is. You know, Karen Page and Foggy kind of figure out that Matt Murdock is Daredevil, and he's got to come up with a way to get out of it. And Stan decides, okay, praise for Stan. He tries something different. Uh-huh. But for an absurdly long period of time, Matt Murdock gets out of this by pretending to be his hipster brother, Mike.
Oh, I remember that now.
And it's sort of it goes on like way too long. Uh-huh. It's like long after they should have caught on, even with the Clark Kent with your glasses on. I don't know who you are. Even buying into that, this gag just goes on way too. What should have been like a one issue plot, like, hey, my brother Mike had to go on a scientific expedition to Antarctica and won't be back for another 50 years. Darn. But Mike keeps coming back. The fact that it goes on way too long, and here you go, we're back. Stan is out of his comfort zone. It's what Stan thinks a 60s hipster is.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing about it is he's supposed to be a 60s hipster, but it's more in Stan's. He's more like a 40s hipster. Mm-hmm. You know, you always expect him to go, it's the cat's meow, man. And yeah. it's just so hilariously not right. And the fact that Stan, for whatever reason, just either he felt like he'd go anything better, or he just genuinely loved writing this like not hipster character. It just goes on like way too hilariously too long. It's not bad in the sense that you want to tear up your comics and go new 52 my ass or anything like that. But it's just so weird. Even if you just limit yourself to Silver Age comics, it is one of the weirdest things ever done, just because it's so off kilter and it just goes on for so long.
Well, that's very good. You know, it's funny you say that, Chris, because this is total synchronicity, because I don't know why, but in the last few days, I've been thinking about that. And I wasn't even thinking about it for this show. I was just thinking how bizarre that was. I think his name was Mike, but I can't remember. Yeah. And he had those sunglasses.
And wasn't he kind of aloof or something? I don't recall, but didn't he play him as kind of aloof and kind of too cool for school? Or am I thinking?
Yes, yes,
yeah,
yeah. He totally had the hipster thing going on.
It kept going. You're right. It kind of makes a lot of those Daredevil books kind of hard to read going back to them.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a very good one.
And again, please don't take
Michael. There he is. But that's not the Gene Colan version of him.
No,
that's not the Gene Colan version.
I was going to say, because apparently Mike is back. Apparently, like some
something,
it thinks he's Mike, and now Mike is a separate entity. But hey, forget that. You know, we're going to talk classic stuff today. Okay, and again, I'm not slaying this. This is just in the weird category, not the bad category. I would read the original Mike Murdock arc 5 times before I would read any of this grim dark.
Karen Page, heroin
stuff they did in the 80s. Right. And if you love that, God bless you. Just don't bring it into my house.
Right.
So since we're talking about weird, does anybody remember the vegetable?
No.
Oh, God.
I remember Animal Vegetable Mineral Man and Doom Patrol.
Of course. Yeah,
that's as far as I go. But the vegetable.
No, this guy was in like two, maybe three panels, period.
Whoa.
It was in the mid-60s, maybe late 60s is when they were one of the times they were trying to reboot the MLJ stuff. And it was in an episode or an issue of The Web. And it was a flashback at that. This guy existed only in a flashback. He's like, and it's been a long time since I've seen it, but he was like, I remember the time when I was fighting the despicable villain, the vegetable. And he looks so ridiculous that it's stuck in the man's head.
Wait, which company put that out? Who put that out?
I'm thinking it was DC, one of their many attempts to revive like The Web and Jaguar and the comic and all of those. But I'm pretty sure it was DC that did it.
That's funny.
And Jerry Siegel, if I recall, created the character.
Oh, I believe that.
Yeah, I mean, but it's just like, really? The vegetable? I mean, you know, he had to be laughing his ass off when he came up with that. I mean, there's no way he couldn't, you know, or at least snickering a little. But yeah, wow. That's he's like two or three panels, maybe. I don't know. Hilarious.
Do you remember, related with vegetable horror, is Lost in Space did an episode that is infamously remembered as their most ridiculous, and they had some ridiculous ones, but with where there was a giant talking carrot that was chasing them around.
Oh my god.
And it was called the Great Vegetable Rebellion.
Oh yeah.
Oh man. So anyway, that reminded me of that with vegetable craziness. Oh, hey, by the way, whenever you guys are ready, I have three. I did some research on this.
Ooh.
Three superheroes of the Silver Age that are the most ridiculous things ever made.
Uh-oh.
Are you ready?
Okay, before we leave the vegetable completely behind, with news that Rob Liefeld is going to be rebooting all of the MLJ Mighty Crusader type heroes. Anybody else looking to see him like a feetless vegetable with like ridiculously huge guns and like thousands?
And all the women with waists about this.
Yes. Yes. I want to see the Rob Liefeld version. I will pay money to see the Rob Liefeld version of the vegetable.
I hate to be this guy, but when was the last time Liefeld delivered a comic book? He had Indiegogo that raised a lot of money that he just didn't do. So it might not be a real, I mean, it could be a great ash can and a few nice pinups, and then just it's coming next year, folks.
In fairness, Rob, he was on point when he was writing for DC at the beginning of the New 52. He just left over creative differences. And to me, there's no greater indictment of the New 52 than Rob Liefeld quitting over the fact your stories suck.
Well, hey, Tom, before we go off on a tangent, let's talk about your...
Oh, yeah. Okay, here's what I did. Based on some of my research and on a book that I think is a great book, called Regrettable Superheroes.
Yes.
Did you see that?
I have the abridged version that came in like one of those loot boxes, loot crates.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
I wanted to get that, but I always forget. They have a villains one now too, and sidekicks.
Oh, those are great. I mean, that's what we're in here for. You know, I mean, that's like Chris was saying, that's part of the charm of older stuff is they dared to be dumb. And everything now is just hip and cool and dark and, you know, it's more homogenized. So, but only in the Silver Age could you get these characters. Are you ready? Go Do you remember it. The incarnation of Captain Marvel where his body limbs flew off? That was his superpower.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yes.
He would yell, and if you can find that cover, that'll be great because the cover his features, it's one of the most, I showed it to my wife and she's like, this is disturbing. You know, his arms fly off and punch two people, his legs come off and hit two other people. But that's pretty darn weird. Well, I don't remember what comic book company. That was when the Captain Marvel name was kind of up for grabs still.
Yes, yes.
If you remember that, because then Marvel then took it for their own character in about 68. or somewhere around then. Yes. But this was when it was up for grabs, and that's what a terrible idea we got, is that his body parts fly off.
See, I remember doing that. In fact, I even kind of remember the cover, but at the same time...
There it is. There's one of them.
I didn't remember it as being a marvel.
Well, that didn't last long for good reason. If I was a kid, I would have been like, oh my God, Mom, look at this.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot. All right.
Okay, so that's number three.
Okay.
They get better.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Do you guys remember? And I think you will, because you know you're DC. This was weird. And, you know, Chris had brought up how Stan Lee was trying to be kind of hip. Well, here's Joe Simon trying to do it.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, man.
Was it Joe Simon? Yeah. Oh, boy. Here we go. Ready? Do you remember Brother Power the Geek?
Yes. 100%.
That was.
I'll be back in just one second.
Chris is totally gonna go get.
Oh, good. Okay. He's not just doing a bathroom break. Okay, Brother Power the Geek. Whoa! What a weird concept. A kind of a hippie monster.
Here you go, my friends. Here you go.
Oh boy!
Run.
Two of them.
Brother Power the Geek. Yes.
See, I know Chris. I knew what he was up to.
Yeah, put those up to the screen. That's good. They're reflecting a little bit of the... Yeah, that's awesome. Look at that.
Yeah, he had the whole hippie stick.
Look at the real-life dangers of hippie land.
Right, there you go. Yeah, here we go. Here we go. And here we go. Our second and final issue here.
Yeah, I wonder why it didn't last.
But I got to tell you, this has an ending so perfect. Honestly, I could not make up a better ending than this. He gets launched into space by Governor Ronald Reagan.
Oh, my God.
That just works on so many levels.
Man, I got to read those two books. Do they compile them somewhere where you can get them cheap?
Not that I have seen. Strangely enough, there's like a big compendium of Prez. But to me, but the only way to have the whole run of Brother Power the Geek is right here.
Oh, God. Well, that's classic idea. But that's now, see, what you're talking about fits there, too. Here's Joe Simon trying to do something hippie-like.
Yes.
And I don't know how well it works or not. I would have to read it. Or if it doesn't work badly, that's good, too.
Didn't he have a couple of people with him or something? Or am I thinking of something else?
He had like a little hippie family with him.
Right, yeah.
But two issues, you know. But seriously, like Reagan launching.
That's perfect, you know.
My state. Oh, mommy.
That's great. You know, the more ridiculous sometimes, the better.
Hey, then, I was waiting for them to show up on Doom Patrol They had so many of the stuff that from the Doom Patrol comics show up on there that I was, you know, in the show for some, like, there's no way that's going to translate. There's no way they're going to put Danny the Street on live action show. There's just no way.
Yeah. No way, right.
Doesn't it seem like Neil Gaiman should have brought back Brother Power by now, or maybe he did.
Somebody,
that just seemed like the perfect thing that he would revisit.
Yeah, you're right.
And it would be cool.
You're right. It would be. That's never been revived. Never been revived.
I can't, in my mind, I can't separate if it happened and it was just so obvious, or it just seems like one of those things that should have happened by now.
I want to think that Morrison would have probably referenced that at some point, just Morrison being Morrison. Right. All right, so you said you had three, Tom. We've done
two. Number one. One of the most oddest things that in a world of odd. Fat Man, the human flying saucer.
Herbie.
And that's Otto Binder.
Yes.
And C.C. Beck.
Yes.
Fat Man, the human. First of all, why do you combine those two concepts? Okay, so you've got a superhero that's obese, you know, a cape, and what does he do? If he starts running, however Fat Man can run, he turns into a flying saucer. Look at that. You'll see it on the bottom. Look at how that works. That makes sense, right?
Yeah, he's an early Transformer.
Yeah. You know what I'm picturing? I think everybody that loves The Simpsons loves the Poochie episode. The scene where, like, the corporate committee is trying to come up with the ultimate cartoon character the kids will identify with, and they're just checking off, like, market tested stuff, like, well, he's got to be a kung fu skateboarding hippie that raps. Just kind of picture him in the 60s. All right, okay, what are the kids these days responding to? They like the flying sauces and fat people. Fat people's always funny. Give me a fat flying saucer guy. Yeah, go draw that for me.
Oh god. Well, you know, it's amazing. Cynthia.
Oh, I'm sorry. I first saw that character in the abridged version of The Regrettable Heroes, but yeah.
Oh, I mean, that's brilliant in its own way.
It's so bad, it's brilliant.
Look at that. What did we get? We got a few issues of that, it looks like.
Yeah, I can just find the first three at this.
Must have been it. I'm surprised it did.
Whole run.
Yeah, I think it must be.
So, guys, there's a villain. I'll see if you guys remember him. I'll be honest, I only vaguely remember a little bit about him, but he was called the Human Flying Fish. And he was DC. He was in, I think, Adventure Comics.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. I don't even think he made a second appearance. But not that I know of anyway, but I first saw him online. So I can't tell you that I've, you know, read all the comics with him, if there's more comics, but... It was like a site that was talking, this is a long time ago, talking about really bizarre.
Is that Denny?
God, no.
No, it doesn't look like. It looks too cool.
Him or something, and I didn't know, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Human Flying Fish.
Wow. Right, what a concept.
It's like, the hell do you come up with that one, and what are you on to do it?
His name was Victor Bragg.
He, of course, he's an Aquaman enemy.
Yeah. He was. I think it was Adventure Comics that he was in.
Wow. You know, yeah. There it is.
And that look at that get up, right?
Wow, what a that's incredible.
There's almost as many colors going on there as Captain Ultra.
Yeah.
Superhero of all time. That's just how it is.
Poor Arthur Curry, so they're like, surely if I defeat the Human Flying Fish, I will gain the respect of my Justice League peers. Oh, man. Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Oh, it is. Remember, we were talking about some of the Marvel stuff. Remember Paste Pot Pete?
I love Paste Pot Pete.
Yes.
The trapster later to be known.
Then he becomes, then even Stan Lee said, that's kind of a goofy name. I think I got to change it.
Yeah, Stan Lee says that, man. You know, it's goofy.
I know.
You know that, like, the subtle touch about that character. Okay, obviously the name doesn't work. That's no. But the thing about it is, it's the beret. You have to think that, if Stan would have called this guy, like, the Exterminator or something like that, the beret. The light, I think it was like light purple. It just like, no, honey, no.
The Human Flying Fish appeared in Sword of Aquaman in 2007. That's probably where that more recent looking art
is from. I have no idea he ever appeared again. Jeez.
Oh, God. And there's something about 2007 that just screams gritty reinvention.
And we got to make this character cool.
Oh, God. You know, while I've been kicking DC pretty much the last 15 years or so, but you know, credit to them for the job they've done with Kite Man. I mean, just leaving him ridiculous. There you go. That's one of the rare things I can actually praise DC for doing consistently.
Uh-huh. Have you been watching the Harley Quinn cartoon?
Great show.
He's one of the more compelling characters. Well, it's a good show, but yeah, he's on there and he's interesting.
As he should be.
Check that out.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's I don't want to spoil it. I'll just say it's a lot of fun and leave it at that. There's if you take the plunge for whatever streaming service it's on, they have lots and lots and lots and lots of clips on YouTube. So is that too many lots? I feel like that was too many lots. Sorry, but you can see a lot of it on YouTube. So hey, I found a picture of Paste Pot Pete without a bunch of advertising around it. So
advertising.
Oh my god!
What was Paste Pot Pete selling?
Well, no, it's just a lot of these comic sites. Free, so there's lots of pop up ads.
And, okay.
I was gonna say, at
a brief image of Paste Pot Pete having like a chain of family like steakhouse restaurants or something. You know?
Yeah.
We have viewers. Sean A. Vera. Sean, I hope we're pronouncing your name right. Forgive me if I'm not. Says Neil Gaiman did write a Brother Power story. So there we have. And Jacob Blackman says that's just crazy. At 8:39 p.m., which could be referring to about six different things we've been talking about in the last
15 minutes. That's right. Yeah, which one?
Talking about the shirt. Talking about the shirt.
So,
to be fair, so, yeah. I liked the Trapsters later when they changed the Paste Pot Pete to the Trapster. I kind of liked his outfit later.
Oh, yeah, it was fine when he was in the Frightful Four.
Yeah.
Well, it all worked fine there.
Yeah,
Kirby, and then the characters had more depth to them and edge to them. They weren't cartoony like they were a few years earlier.
Yeah.
Well, they did a lot of those with the Human Torch store when he was solo. Remember Asbestos Man? Do you remember that?
No,
I mean, Asbestos Man, it almost makes sense. I mean, especially for its time. Yeah. But looking back at it, it's like, oh, wow, this guy's got an asbestos costume.
You go back and reread that today, and you keep thinking about those the things you'll see between posts. Like, I will never regret this choice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, look at that outfit.
Little known trivia: it was part of a team with Smokes Heavily Man.
Yeah, right.
Or hey, there is Smokescreen from the mid '80s. He just appeared in like some advertising, anti-smoking advertising, in like '85 or '86.
Yeah.
Great. Somebody, come on and do that one. It's gotta happen.
Asbestos Man was then recruited years later to do commercials on TV. Warning people about the dangers of asbestos.
Whatever you do, kids, don't use asbestos.
I did see him recently somewhere where he was. I was reading a modern comic, and it was, you know, how they try to do things much more realistically, and they were actually interviewing that guy when he's like 50 or 60, and he was coughing all the time because of the asbestos inhalation.
I want to joke about that. I don't want to see it. I just want to joke about it.
Right.
No, but that is funny now that I think about it, that they brought him back even.
Yes.
So I want to give a special shout out real quick, if you guys don't mind. Sure. Now, this was in the Bronze Age, but the characters were so Silver Age, it's ridiculous. And it's also my comic book obsession. I have an unhealthy fascination with the stupid villains that they had in the Hostess ads in the comic books, those one page terrible little stories. Tell me Chairman, the guy
that
turns people into chairs, is not silvery as hell. I mean, yeah, they're so terrible. June Jitsui, not Jitsu, Jitsui.
Oh my god.
Oh, they were so, and I like stabbed them up for like every superhero game that I've played.
His name was actually Chairman.
Yeah, I don't know the same order too, but he fought Batman. And he turned a cop into a chair, and the chair was like a hardback chair, but it like had the cop's outfit, like his uniform on there. It was like a part of the, I don't know, it was strange. But so like that's how I judge a superhero role playing game, or even I made them for Dice Masters too, the cards and everything. But is if they can handle at least 10 of those really dumbass villains, then they get there we are.
There's Jujutsu.
And my favorite, one of my favorites, isn't one character, but it's like a gang of. They're called the Roller Disco Devils.
Yeah.
Wow.
He like murdered them. Yeah. He rolled them up in concrete. He took the street and went, rolled their and they're laying there and there with their heads poking out, and you're like, no way they survived that.
They're munching down on hostess fruit pies. They're laying there and go like, I'm tasting my own blood.
Oh, here
there
they are
the Roman Disco Devils. I've stabbed them up more times than I've had hot
meals. Oh my god. Well, how about that comment? How about Jacob there?
Yeah, he points out some of those characters have become legit. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Jacob's right. Absolutely. And I love that. I geeked out when I found that out. And I didn't find it out till after the fact. And I'm like, what? They're doing stuff with the hostess? Because I've, like I said, unhealthy fascination, guys. I'm not even joking. Like, it's
No, Cynthia, you're the only sane person on the planet.
I wouldn't go that far.
No, I'm right there with you. As Jacob well knows, I do small press RPGs. You've never heard of my stuff, but I love to throw fake snack kick ads in the back featuring characters from the adventures. Just it makes it more fun. And plus, the thing I hate about RPGs is you get to the end of the issue, just paging through it, like, oh, it's just the credits or it's just the OGL page. I want to put something a little fun there, so it's not just the end. Sorry, but wow, the Silver Age was stranger than I realized. You know, I was reading through your chapters on the history for Sentinel Comics, Chris. I kept thinking to myself, he's making some of this shit up. He's exaggerating. He's for comedic effect. He's making some of this stuff.
And oh no!
Now I have to realize that is not the people were trying to sell books every month, and they were
even scratched the surface. Between the other comic companies, Archie Comics tried to do some superheroes. There's just tons of this stuff out there.
Yeah, Mike,
while we're talking about ads, check your email. I just sent you something. I'm sorry.
The MLJ superheroes I was mentioned about with the vegetable, that was pre-Archie, Archie Comics, if I recall. And then I don't know if they just Archie became popular, so they changed the name, or if there was a. I think it was why.
Because that really caught on.
Yeah, they had quite a few superheroes.
But remember, the Archie characters even became superheroes for a while there. Yes. One of them was like Captain Pureheart. I think might have even been Archie. And,
really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, one of them, maybe Jughead, they became superheroes during that craze, too.
Okay, I have to go look that up. That's awesome.
It is. Like I said, no shame. It was like, we're doing this.
Yeah, like Egg Foo. Do you guys remember Egg Foo?
No.
Yes.
He's a DC character.
Yes.
I think Ross Andrew drew him. Maybe.
Yeah, he came back in 52, the weekly series.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
How are they going to do that and make it not racist? That's what I want to know.
They don't literally call him Egg Foo. It's something that sounds like legit Chinese, and they made him a super serious evil badass that other villains respect.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
There he is. Pure heart to power. God.
That's awesome. For those of you who don't know who Egg Foo is, he's literally an egg-shaped stereotype of the Asian villains of the era.
Mm-hmm.
And he's an egg.
If you're offended by Marvel's The Mandarin, just never Google Egg Foo. You'll pop a blood vessel, really.
Well, here is his latest appearance, which I think was in 52.
Holy crap!
Yeah, I think this is Grant Morrison, right? Well, there's a whole team of guys up on 52. But he was a mad scientist. Actually, he kind of reminds me of MODOK in this picture.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
He had a very MODOK quality.
He really.
A combination of MODOK and Humpty Dumpty.
Yes. 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 Yeah, we all know DC's had a serious case of MODOK envy for years. this was their chance to scratch that itch.
Yeah, I hate to bring up something that's not Silver Age, but in one of the latest iterations, West Coast Avengers, I had a villain called BroDoK, and I think the name tells you everything you need to know about that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, I have an honorable mention from another era too, if it's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
There was a character created in early 40s that astounded me when I read about it. It's a superhero simply called the Eye. Eye. He is an eye that floats in the air. And it was so bizarre to me that I Actually, they did reprint that in a hardcover. Now, most of it is useless because, as you know, the Golden Age books would have, the eye would be like 8 pages, and then you got 50 other pages of terrible stories of detectives and Tarzans and, you know, just this, you know, it's just all the same thing. Oh, it's over and over, you know, Steel, Sterling, detective, and, you know, but there he is. And it was like, you're kidding me. What can this thing do?
I love that you pluralized Tarzan. That's great.
You know,
yeah, they were.
I'm with you about wondering what the eye can do, but I'm just really hoping that, like, his secret identity is he puts on a monocle and, like, nobody knows who he is.
Nobody knows. Yeah, floating in space, you know, in the sky. That can't be the eye. That's another guy.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, people don't want me writing comics. Because I would totally have the eye versus one of those hostess villains called Big Mouth, who's just a disembodied mouth, putting up a roller coaster for what?
I'd love that.
I think we'd be the only two in the universe, Tom.
Right, probably. Probably.
Did my email reach your mic?
Just now. Just okay. Now.
All right, well, okay, while we're on the topic of ads, I had to share the visual here with Mike because there's no way anybody would believe me. This was the finished pencils that I just sent Mike for an anti-drug ad. It was going to be Superman teaming up with Kenny Rogers, the gambler himself.
What? Yes, really?
The original pencils. I just sent my copy to Mike here.
Wow. Yeah, 1 second. Let me. I'm just getting it zoomed in so we can see it. And I will share it with the world. First time ever in broadcast, I'm sure.
exclusive.
Here you go.
Can you guys read that? You can't read that, can you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. There's your money panel right there in the center, right there.
That is so cool.
Stand back, Superman. The gambler's handling the business here.
Wow. Chris, did you say you wrote this?
No, I found it. I found it.
Oh, okay.
Lord knows. I wish I could write something.
That is so surreal.
And it's Kurt Swan. It's beautiful.
Oh, Kurt Swan was great.
Yes, but it's like Superman doing mop up duty for Kenny Rogers.
Isn't that something?
Hey, yes. That seems like that really should be a Chuck Norris joke, but it's a Kenny Rogers joke.
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
See, we could go on just weird. Yeah.
Yes, we could. Yes.
So where do we go from here? I can't remember if I can top that.
The big gang.
The big gang.
What's the big gang? Yeah, do you remember them? Oh, I don't remember who they. What comic it was in, but this is mid to late '60s. They were literally a group of supervillains that existed because each one had the word "big" in their name. There was like Big Wig, and I think she had like an exploding hairpiece. I don't remember if the guy or girl. Yeah, Big Shot, Big Deal, Big Cheese. There's like everybody in there, and I think there's a lot more than that. It's been a long time. Everybody had the name Big in it. And, I don't even remember what comic this was in. That's.
I'm having trouble finding that.
It might have. Hey, look up Adam. It might have been in the Adam. I can't swear to being the Adam, but
that guy, yeah, that was a cool hero too.
Yeah, I love the Adam.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me. Well, I'm looking for that. I'll share this with you guys.
Whoa. Well, that's a classic character.
Yes, oh yes, yes.
If you're bringing that up because it's weird, it is weird, but it's good.
Yeah. Totally.
All right, so that big gang was in, I'm seeing Adam 34, 1967.
Yes, I was thinking it was Adam. Yay.
Oh, Lord, that's on my shelf somewhere. I know what I'm doing after the show.
Good for you. Well, you got a good collection. Could come out with Brother Power the Geek that fast. Very impressive.
So the big gang was, oh, my God, Big Head, Big Ben, Big Wig, Big Bertha, Big Shot, Big Cheese, Big...
Yeah, all single appearance? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. They're just waiting for to be revived.
Yes. Yeah. How did these not come back when Grant Morrison and Gail Simone were doing the Adam?
No kidding.
Because you know Grant Morrison knows these guys.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure.
I don't know. That's crazy. Hey, one thing, since we're talking Silver Age, my personal favorite from the Silver Age, and this is just me, but Stranko's work on Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah,
just talking about the art, the covers.
Very progressive for its time.
Yeah.
All right, I got to tell my Jim Steranko story here, because I don't have a chance to break this down. Very first time I went to Dragon Con in Atlanta. Absolutely fabulous, fabulous show. I think it was 94. This is 93, 94. And the highlight, at least back in those days, was they would have a fashion show, which tended to lean toward very lovely women wearing very little and like very well done production numbers. And that Bachelor McGee that pushed a lot of my buttons. And in true Dragon Con style, the fashion show was hosted by Anthony Daniels, who I'm sure everybody listening to this immediately recognizes as C-3PO.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, and actually, Chris, he was the voice of Kit on Knight Rider 2. I'm sorry, please continue.
Yeah.
No, that was William Daniels from St. Elsewhere.
Oh, shit, you're killing me. All right, you're right. Forgive me.
So Anthony Daniels is up there. He's the host, and he's laying down the rules that he's calling him mock serious up there. Like there will be no lascivious or ungentlemanly outbursts while these ladies are performing. And to, like, emphasize his point, he whips out, like, a riding crop. And from the back of the room, you hear this voice go, "Bring out the girls!" And then Anthony Daniels goes, "You, sir, on the stage now." And it's Jim Steranko.
Huh.
So Steranko goes up on stage, and Anthony Daniels spanks him with a riding crop. And I'm thinking, I'm one of like 200 people that can say, I got to see C-3PO spank Jim Steranko with a riding crop.
Yeah.
I'm sure when I'm like 120 in the old age, I got to see C-3PO spank Jim Steranko with a riding crop. They're just going to push me a little further in the corner. It was there. I saw it. It happened. So there you go. One of my two enduring Jim Steranko memories.
Did you hear the story?
I'm sorry,
go ahead.
No, I was just in gaping mouth when you're going to ask him what the other one was, but why don't you go ahead, because maybe this is I have the explicit tag on this show on iTunes, but maybe we'll question that a little bit. So Cynthia, please go ahead with your question.
Did you guys hear about what Steranko did to Bob Kane?
He was heard at
a convention.
Go ahead, please.
And I guess I don't remember all the details, but Steranko recounted it in like tweets. Like, it took forever. It was like 300 tweets or something. I mean, not that much, but like, I guess they were around, and Bob Kane there was like a bunch of people, and Bob Kane dismissively slapped him and said, called him Jim Baby or something, and kind of smacked him up. And after the meeting, that little incident was over. I guess Steranko just stewed about it and got more and more pissed. So then he saw him, I think, on like an elevator. And he goes,
there you go.
Bob Baby and smacked him. Oh, yeah, there we are.
Yeah.
This is for Bill Finger, baby.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
This is five Bill Fingers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Steranko has a following on Twitter. He like has hangouts and stuff, and he slapped that dude. And it sounds like he had it coming on a few different levels.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're talking about Bob Kane.
Oh, yeah.
Bob Kane was considered to be just so into himself, and that wherever he went, he'd have to tell everybody, "I created Batman," and anyway, I don't know. Did Bill Finger get enough credit for the work that Bob Kane did?
DC is finally crediting Bill Finger. God bless.
Good. Yeah.
Finally, yeah. And there's a great documentary about it. What is it called? But it like had me in tears. It was so good.
Did anybody else? I'll have to see that.
Like Batman and Bill, or something like that. I think it's called.
Yes.
It's a fantastic documentary, like one of the top 10 documentaries I've ever seen.
Oh, cool.
I'm sharing this because Chris shared it with me, and I realized I just noticed all these private chats I wasn't seeing, and the Super Green Beret. Go, Chris.
Well, okay, I had to do one that was legitimately bad, and I can't imagine anything more difficult than trying to write a war comic in the middle of the Vietnam War.
Yeah, you
will see why wisely they all stuck World War II for the most part. But sure enough, somebody tried to do like a Sergeant Rock style comic in terms of the Vietnam War, and it was Todd Helton, Super Green Beret, about a little kid that puts on a magical green beret and wipes out and starts killing people in Southeast Asia. And again, here you go. All right, if you're deeply offended by the Mandarin, this is as deep as you should ever go in Super Green Beret, because in addition to resurrecting a lot of war comic tropes, it's got a very, let's just say, it's got a very 1940s attitude about our enemies in that particular war. That was published for children, and I frankly can't count how many levels that's wrong. You know. The one good thing I could say about it is the parody that I got to do of that in History of Sentinel Comics. I'm fairly proud of that.
Oh, good. I got to look at that. I'm going to have to check that out.
And Sentinel Comics RPG has
came out. Don't actually touch that with your bare hands.
When does the history book come out? Because the RPG delivered this last week, right?
Yes, it is. Well, it's in the process of being delivered. We got the final manuscript in just in time for COVID to hit and for our awesome, super fabulous editor to go on maternity leave. So it was like a perfect storm, but it is being processed, it's being looked at, and it will be on the way to the people, to you people. I can guarantee you, because the wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people at Greater Than Games have, okay, I can't tell you the exact, they paid me a huge amount. I mean, they have paid me in full, a substantial sum of money. The book is coming out. it's they paid me far too much for them not to put it out at this point.
Well, they do card games, not just RPGs. So they have some liquid capital.
Yeah, and they're great people who put out a great product. I have never been treated better in my 25-year writing career.
I've heard lots of good things about him. We've had Chris Bedell on this very podcast in the past. He's a well-dressed gentleman, and comics, the card game. I had a happy hour with those cards in my hand. So
yes,
can't say enough good things about it. And I'm really glad they treated you so well. So check out that game, and we have a supplement for it written by Mr. McLaughlin. So
indeed, we do. And Chris made that happen. So here you go, folks.
I look forward to playing that.
Go buy Spectrum Games stuff, and then go buy Greater Than Games. You got your Christmas shopping taken care of. Just clean out these three companies.
Yeah, all done. It's been all done today.
There you go. You'll please everyone on your list.
I will.
So speaking of pleasing people, my wife has let me know in a pretext that I need to come upstairs. So let's wrap things up. Anybody closing thoughts?
Yeah. Well, can I say something?
Tom,
go on, Cynthia. You can go first.
It's all good. Go ahead.
I just want to mention that I think one of the most charming things about Batman was the stuff that most people don't like at all, and it was his sci-fi era. And in the late 50s, talk about weird, but it was so surrealistic. You know, actually, it gave us a classic, Robin Dies at Dawn, which was very interesting, fantastic cover, and also a weird, surreal story. But I like those, the weirdness, and I wish they would all be collected, that whole Batman collection. But I don't think it's esteemed enough. But I think it's weird enough that I like stuff like that. But you passed one of the covers.
They're on their way.
No, that's 60s. Like that, you know, like – the alien Batman, you know, and then you were then getting somewhere underneath there. But not that. That's 60s, more when they brought him to be more. There's the classic.
Yes.
But I think those are fascinating, even if they're not good.
They're working their way in that direction with those big omnibus editions they're doing. I think they're into the late 40s now. So they're on their way, and they're coming out on slick paper and hard.
I can't wait.
So yeah, they're getting there.
That's good news. And then you also had Bat Mite and Bat Baby. I mean, you had some real weird stuff during that time, getting back to weird. But I thought it was interesting weird. What's that?
No, I was thinking of Wonder. Wasn't it Wonder Tot they had?
Yeah.
Tot. I'm like, really?
Yes. Yeah, I know.
And they would do the team ups with like the adult Wonder Woman and Wonder Girl and Wonder Tot. You know, back when Bob Kaniger was like blatantly trying to get himself fired off that book. I never find a giant egg. I'll be out of here tomorrow.
Well, and then there was the when Batman became Bat Baby. Well, we what a weird concept right there. And Robin has to carry him around because he's a baby. And yet he still had enough ability to fight crime that way.
They have brought that back in death metal.
Oh, did they?
Yes. Yes. And in fact, one of the great meta moments in that series is that evil toddler Batman winds up throwing down with Owlman, the evil Batman from Earth 3. And as he's beating toddler Batman, toddler Batman is like, "You can't do this to me." Owlman, who's kind of figured out the meta nature of the DC universe, and he goes, "Oh, yes, I can do this to you. And you're a stupid idea, and no one will remember you. But I will survive the next reboot, because I always survive the reboot." I'm like, "Oh, my God." There can't be more than 20 people who get this. But, man, good stuff. But
those 20 people love it.
Yes. Yes.
Hey. Rank Google toddler Batman. All I get is Halloween costumes, so I'll have to dive for that later. But yeah. I didn't know that was a thing out there. That's pretty amazing.
I wanted to share a little story. When I was doing Omlevax, Z-Man gave us a nice big budget for art. And so with the directive of go out and contact all the old Silver Age artists and even Bronze Age artists that you can get a hold of and have them do some art for it. And I'm like, so one of the people I got a hold of was Gene Colan. And he was such a sweetheart guy, right? But he wanted like, and I don't remember the number, and this is back in like 03. So, you know, and I think he wanted like $600 or $800 just for a penciled piece. Wow. And then if it was going to, right. And this is going to be a black and white book. This is when color books were really still out of the realm of indie publishers. And so like for inks, he wanted like double that. And so I had to, and it was the hardest thing ever. I had to say, well, I'm sorry, but because I still had a lot of other stuff, but we did get like Dick Ayers, Herb Trimpe.
Wow.
Mike Zeck did a piece. I know he's not Silver Age or what have you, but he did a piece. Joe Rubinstein. We were able to get quite a few really good people, but I really wanted Gene in there so bad. I even got to talk to Ditko on the phone briefly.
Wow. That's something to tell people.
And he was so sweet. He was a nice guy. I've always heard, oh, he's this or that, but to me he was super nice. And he's like yeah, my eyesight's going and it takes me a long time to, so I'm gonna have to turn it down.
I'm building up the soap opera nature of our show. I would love to analyze Silver Age artists, and we didn't even get to the best of, but that's a whole nother topic anyway.
Sure.
You know, I enjoy this, but Gene Colan, however it's pronounced, was one of my favorites, but I'll get back to that when we talk about that in more depth another time.
Yeah, we should probably do best Silver Age next time, because we think we covered worst and weird.
We didn't even cover it. we did a good job.
We didn't even get the praying mantis man, though.
We unloaded some psychic baggage tonight. That's the key.
Yes, we did.
That's right.
All right.
Cool. Hey, Mike. Last time I told a wrestler story, I will tell you another, since it's Silver Age, Stan Lee story, if you want me to.
Go for it.
Okay. When we were working together, he was in his 80s, and he was on Twitter. Now, I always thought, this is pretty impressive already, an 80-year-old person who's embracing Twitter. He embraced MySpace, too. So anyway, so we're both on Twitter. So one day I tweet an utterly stupid and useless thing to ever bother to tweet. I just said something like, my wife and I are going out to dinner tonight in Fredonia. Now, I lived in Jamestown, New York. Fredonia was like 45 minutes away. Now, who would care that I'm going out to eat, right? So but you know how people did that. They tweet that they're going to the bathroom or something. So I tweeted that I'm going to Fredonia. And my wife and I went out. We come home like 3 hours later after a nice dinner. I go on Twitter to see if anybody's, what's going on Twitter. I have a personal message from Stan Lee. All right. So I look at it, and it doesn't say anything like, hey, Tom, how are you, or Excelsior. It was just simply right to the point, and it was, where the hell is Fredonia? That was it. So somebody paid attention.
Oh, God, that is so perfect.
I know. That,
when I post the link to this, that's going to be my hashtag.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, God. Quick little aside. The Marx Brothers used Fredonia as the war, in a war, Fredonia versus somebody else. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Duck soup. That was in duck soup. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, right, duck soup. And the people in Fredonia, the mayor, wrote to the Marx Brothers and the studio and said, you know, You shouldn't be using our name in your movie. It's bad for our city's reputation. And Groucho Marx responded by saying, you need to change your city name. It's ruining our movie.
Yeah, it sounds like Groucho.
Yeah, right. It does.
And there you go. Evil toddler Batman from Death Metal.
Oh, okay. My God.
There's a panel down where he's telling the heroes he's going to kill them with his sharp little toddler teeth.
God.
Yeah, there we go. Here you go.
There he is.
There you go.
Hard baby out teeth. With my baby teeth.
Yeah, I'm convinced death metal was it's just so damn weird, Chris. I it almost feels like I think you said before, like we're going out in style. Maybe this is the last big DC event. And of course now they're doing Endless Winter, so it wasn't the last big one, but and hey, they got the best marketing possible for Endless Winter. There's a nor'easter hitting the East Coast. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And our talented friends, Ron Mars and Andy Lanning, on that one.
They were also on this podcast, amazingly enough. So, well, hey, guys, I do have to go. Thanks to everyone who checked us out on the internet or, iTunes is also the internet. So there you go. Any closing thoughts? Tom, Chris, Cynthia?
No, having a great time. Look forward to the next one.
Yeah.
All right, cool. What's aim for next? Yeah, good talk to you guys. Sorry, Chris, go ahead.
Talk to you guys. And hey, if you haven't already, go to the Facebook and give Ghost Show Press a like. We have some big news coming up in the next couple of days. So be on board. Be the first in your neighborhood to know.
Nice. Sweet. And nice. I would say let's meet next week, but that's Christmas. So maybe 2 weeks.
Works for me.
It's a great time for me.
All right, cool. All right, well, hey, thanks a lot. And to all our listeners and viewers out there, we'll catch you next time on the BAMP Podcast.